I have not started grading your midterms yet, but I should start. Hopefully, I will start the latest tomorrow morning, and maybe I will be able to complete it as promised by Monday morning, but we'll see how much time I'm able to have this weekend. Okay. We are now in session number something like number 7 out of 10 sessions, and then you have the project. So we have centralized logging today, monitoring next week, and then we have 2 weeks of Windows. I will, right around here, publish all the detailed information about the project. But start thinking about forming groups. Ideally, you should be 3 people together in a group, but two or three, no more than 3 in a group. You can do the project individually as well, but I would very much prefer that you do it in a group. What is really important is that you spend time on what we have done up until including last week and get that to work. So this week and next week is not that important. These are weeks where you have time to catch up. So now we're just going to do a case this week and a case next week, where we're just going to apply the workflow and reinforce what we have learned previously. And something new, of course. But it's really important that you spend time. So don't worry if you're a week or two or three behind. Spend these weeks so you get the workflow going. That means that you understand the point and how you use the control repo and what R10K does. So why do I stress this? So the purpose of this course is that you should know how to do the best practice standard workflow of professional system administration. And that's what we're learning when we're using the same workflow as you do when you code. And you write code, you commit, and push to Git repository, which you share with others, so you can work together, and then you have an automated system for deploying this. And what we are not stressing, because it's not as important, and if we're going to do this like a entire enterprise professional setup, it gets sort of too complicated. But in this workflow, if you were to work for like a company like Evry or Basefarm or one of the bigger system administration companies in Norway or elsewhere, then you would, in this pipeline, of course, have testing. So whenever you test things locally yourself, but as soon as you push something to Git, there would be a hook that would start a testing process verifying your code that everything works as planned. So you would include, and then you would receive feedback automatically if you're doing something that breaks the system. So the test setup would be much more complicated, but it's easy for you to imagine that you just automate testing as part of the pipeline in this. The other thing is that you should use tasks or you should use some kind of Kanban system. like you probably see, that sometimes I pull up this. This is my to-do lists. What I need to do as a study program director, what I need to do in the operating system course, what I need to do in this course, and all the other things I need to do. Just so, you know, task lists. And this works in general for your everyday work, but it works specifically well when you work together in a group and you're going to do a system administration or a systems development project. So normally you would then work on tasks you are assigned in Trello or in Jira or in any of these systems that you use today for software development. You have a task that you're going to add some code or do some changes in your infrastructure configuration, and then you do commit and you link the commits and your branches to the tasks you're doing, which you share with others. So it's, of course, these other things. But you have learned this in other courses, so we don't stress that as much here. We try to keep it as simple as possible, but not simpler. The other thing is that one thing, just learning this workflow, is that's sort of easy. But what you're probably fighting the most with is all the troubleshooting. And that's the other main purpose of this course. This is the course where you're going to do all the stuff in practice, and you're going to have to do troubleshooting. Figure out why doesn't this work. So you've gotten a lot of help from me for most of the problems. You probably have some problems left. And that's, of course, also the goal of your project, is to demonstrate that you're able to implement something and solve problems. And just to give you an example, I've given you a document where it says basically what you should do to troubleshoot. Where did I put that? Yeah, here. Make sure you have an overview of the system, like which processes are doing what or which services are doing what. And for whatever the system you're using, probably have a manual that helps you troubleshoot. Go to the manual, read. Most of the times, you can ask for more information. If it's a command line, you can use minus V for verbose, sometimes multiple Vs. So if I say minus V and it doesn't say much more, then I try minus VV, which usually says more. And then, or there's a minus D for debug, which can give you some information. But most of the time, we go to the logs. You look, something fails when you try to do something. Usually then you will find an entry in the log. And this is also why we're going to address centralized logging today, because this helps this process. But in general, on Linux systems, we go to var log, find the relevant logs, and check which logs change when this fails. So, the lab exercises. You have this one page here with all this, by the way, because these are the problems I had to solve. And so, like this here, Puppet did not register reports in Foreman. I could not find any reports from Foreman, from Puppet in Foreman. So all my Puppet agents were running. They should report to Foreman, but no reports were showing up. And when, let's see, I did on the Foreman server, on manager, I then went to var log, and into Foreman, I see which file has changed the most recently. Let's see, it's now 10:28, and I have a file that's changed here, so something was logged. Then I can either view the entire log, you know, or I look for something in the log, like anything logged from test.borg.trek. Yeah. Or I look in the log for something marked error. Usually messages that have causes errors are marked with error in uppercase, like this. No errors. Or I just look at the end of the log to see the most recent events. So, how I ended up here was that when Foreman was not getting reports from the Puppet agents, I found in the log this message. Could not generate DH key pair. And I took a course on network security back in 2001. So I remember that the only real or the most cool thing about crypto I remember was Diffie-Hellman. Because Diffie-Hellman was when I suddenly realized how beautiful mathematics can be. Because Diffie-Hellman is really, really simple. And it's a very simple computation, but it allows two persons to exchange a secret while someone listens on everything they're saying, but unable to obtain that secret. And it's really simple mathematics, but so that's when sort of you start enjoying mathematics. But Diffie-Hellman has his weaknesses. But so that's why DH key pair. This is some crypto that's failing. But when you then Google this, and I'm sure you know this trick, that you Google with this what are they called? Quote, double quotes. So you Google for the exact string, you know? And this brings you, let's see, to a lot of general so this is the error message, but here it says Java, SSL, error on Debian. Looks like this is an error that pops up in a bunch of situations. Okay, can I see anything related to Foreman? This brings us, a ticket from Puppet Labs. That sounds relevant. And then you read through this, or you just go directly to the end. And you see that there's a guy, Kjetil Melan, a Norwegian probably, says that as a dirty little hack to get around this, I added this to the Foreman SSL conf file. But you know, you get an error. Find out, either look in the logs, but you have to know which log to look at. If you don't find anything in the logs, you can go with the configuration file of the service and increase the log level. So, like, I can probably ask Foreman, Here, in etc foreman settings.yaml, which is one of the configurations files for foreman, you see the log settings for the current environment can be adjusted. So the level here is info. So if I want more information, I could change this to debug or something. Okay, what can I change it to? Look in the manual. It says, all says in the manual. So, but most services have the chance of logging extra information. Okay. So keep this in mind. One thing is that you know the workflow. The other thing, which is also the purpose of this course, is that you should become better at troubleshooting. That makes you real valuable if you get to be known as the person who solves problems. Then your company will never let you go, and they will pay you extra when you need to have more money. Yeah. Okay. So, back to the workflow. We have a control repo. Git repository, which is called the control repo. And this control repo, that's basically where I do all my coding. So I reuse everything I can reuse. I use a bunch of different modules, and then I control everything from the control repo. And the way I do this, I put all my site-specific data in Hiera. You choose what you define as site-specific. But at least like passwords, specific host names, anything you should think you should not hard code, you put in Hiera. So you see I have a directory here, Hiera data, which has one file that says common. This can be read by all hosts. But sometimes you want data in Hiera that can only be accessed by specific hosts. So then I put that in the nodes directory with a file name that matches the host name. So here in common, I have this, that the list of all the software that should be on Windows. I like to have this separately in Hiera, so whenever I need more software on all my Windows hosts, I can just add it to the list here and wait half an hour and it's deployed. The root SSH key, this is the public key, should be available to all Linux hosts. And the profile and the RabbitMQ password is here. Okay? I'm showing you the password I use for RabbitMQ, and I'm right now, since this is recorded, I'm showing this password to the rest of the world as well, which is interesting. But this is just a training scenario, so it doesn't matter, of course. Speaking of passwords, how do you generate passwords? Because you need to generate passwords. How do you do it? When you need a password that you, most of the times, I mean, in general, you should never remember passwords other than very few. But for all your services, sometimes you need to generate a password. Suggestion, how do you generate a password? If you have a Linux, yep. And there are tools for that, that you can use. Exactly. Don't come up with the password yourself. Because we are not good at random thinking. We are humans. We are predictable. We have certain behavior. So that's why all our passwords are based on our pets. So what you do, you use, for instance, on Linux, tvgen, I want a 16 character password. And these are created so they are sort of readable. So when you need a password that you want to be have no patterns, just be completely random, add minus S. And maybe you want 24 character password. Yeah. You know, so just use some kind of tool. On Linux you can use this, generates a random new password anytime, and then there you have your password. Okay, and in nodes, I have one file called monitor.borg.trek. And this is the data that only is relevant for monitor. And then when Puppet does lookups in Hiera, it first looks for its data in common.yaml. And then it looks based on the host name if there's any more specific information for this host. That's why it's called Hiera, hierarchy, look general and more specific and more specific. So all site-specific data you put in Hiera, then all the modules you need to reuse, we don't do any more Puppet module install. We just put them in the Puppet file. So, at the root of the control repo, there is a Puppet file, which has to be called Puppet file with uppercase P. And I just list all my modules. But you know what? There's one problem with this. And this is a problem that I think I'm going to give you. I was supposed to give it as a problem that you can solve, but I haven't had time to create it yet. So this is the Puppet file with all the modules that should be deployed. If I want a completely reliable, stable environment using these modules, and I deploy, like every day I do this deployment, and I read this list, what can be a problem? So I create my entire infrastructure, and everything works perfectly, and I want this frozen, this should keep working perfectly for the next 6 months. But this keeps getting executed every day. Yes. Exactly. These modules, they're not static. There are hundreds of developers working on these. They make new releases. So what you would do in a stable environment is that on each line here you would specify which version, or which you can even specify this down to one exact git commit for the module. You can add all this information, and that was something I would give you as an extra problem outside the lab, would be to stabilize your Puppet file by adding version numbers to these. But so what we do now is let's just hope that things don't break for the next couple of weeks. So all the modules you need, you put in the Puppet file. Then you do your Puppet coding in the profile module. And if this leads to changes in a server role, in the role module, you would update this. So I'm going to give you an example. I just want to show you that the Puppet file, there's no automatic inclusion of dependencies. So when you include one module, and that module depends on others, make sure that the others are listed in the Puppet file as well. And this is not... let's see. I showed you this command before. I can list all the modules installed. So let me list all these modules installed in the testing environment to check that it's okay, that I got all the dependencies, that the Puppet file is correct. Because I've run R10K and it has deployed all the modules. So this is what I do whenever I updated something in the control repo. I run R10K deploy, and now I'm just deploying my testing environment. Yep. So I can let it be verbose, so you see that it's updating all these modules. What is a Puppet environment? It's just a directory. It's nothing scary or advanced. It's just a directory. In ETC Puppet Labs code environments, I have a directory production and a directory testing. And most of the time, these are close to identical when I'm not doing any development or testing work. And I can have more, of course. So in testing, see, here I have Hiera data from the control repo. I have this file also from the control repo. I have the Puppet file. And I have the site file and the modules. But the modules, they are not here. There's no directory here called modules. So this is created by R10K. And this is where you find all the modules installed, which we listed in the Puppet file. Okay, let's check that this looks good. So I hit Control R to search my command history and do this list. To list my installed modules in the environment testing. Aha! So, Elasticsearch depends on something which is an unmet dependency. And there's something that's invalid here. And it says that failed to meet some dependencies, failed to meet some dependencies. But this is not a problem. Because this checks based on the metadata in the Puppet modules. And sometimes developers forget to update this metadata, so this gives incorrect output. So I have a yum module, but it has been renamed. But Elasticsearch developers hasn't updated the metadata. So, because when I installed the because responsibility for this yum module has been taken over by Puppet. So the module is now called Puppet yum. So this is correct, but the metadata in the Elasticsearch module is not updated to reflect this, and that's why it shows an error. Yeah. So B, don't, you know, you have to know what's going on. And also see that there are some that require specific versions. Which probably many times also are just due to errors in the metadata registration of the module. But it's nice to check this, that I know that, okay, everything is fine, but there are three modules I need to check. Then I go to the homepage of those modules and see if it's an actual error or probably not an error. So I ran R10K. What R10K does? This is an exam question. What does R10K do? Yeah. R10K pulls from Git. That's obvious. But that's easy. That's just a script with some commands. So the magic that R10K does is it creates Puppet environments, which are just directories, from the branches. So if you have a control repo with two branches, production and testing, then R10K will create environments based on these. And more importantly, R10K reads the Puppet file in the repository and install all the modules listed there. So it creates environments from the branches, and it reads the Puppet files, Puppet file, and deploy all the modules. So if I want new software installed on all my hosts, this is what I do. In my control repo, let me just check. Okay, I'm on Git branch testing. Status. Yeah, nothing to commit. The working directory clean. Okay. So I'm going to install software on Linux. I go to my profile module. And the control repo has two modules in the site directory, the profile and the role. So I go to profile, manifests, and in base Linux, I have some, yes, I should probably, yeah, of course I have this list here, so I don't add manually anything to this. I just need to, this variable here, this is retrieved from Hiera. So what I do is I go to Hiera and I add software called BinClock here. If I now do a git status, you see I modified common YAML. So I commit, say, just added bin clock. Then I push to the remote testing repository. Then I go to manager. When I made changes, I have to run R10K. Again, this can be set up to do this automatically, of course. But no, I make changes, I commit them, push them to Git, run R10K, so R10K fetches the changes, implements them in the testing environment. And let me see, which host do I have in the testing environment? So let me set up Foxy Proxy so I can visit Foreman. See, I have placed my directory 02 and monitor and test. They are in the testing environment. So let's see. Test. Okay, it ran Puppet 26 minutes ago. So it will probably run again soon, but if I hurry, I can beat it. So if I do now a puppet agent minus T with a no operation, let's see if it says that bin clock would be installed. Aha. And you wait until now with telling me. Yes, I did. Okay. Like this. Yes. Commit, push. Then again. Do this. Let's see, it ran 1 minute ago. Was that right before or after? Is bin clock available? Nope. So if I run this without no operation, it will actually install it. The basic workflow, so you can separate production from your testing environment, and you have all your code in version control. So you have documented everything you're doing, and people you can work together in a group and share everything, and people can create Git branches for the features they're working on and test them separately from the others, etc. Everything you know from doing ordinary software development. So now bin clock was installed, and on all my Linux hosts within half an hour, I can enjoy this beautiful binary clock. I haven't said that much about Foreman or given you any demonstration of much of Foreman, but Foreman should be quite easy to understand. I mean, it's a simple graphical user interface. Just click around so you get to know it. The one thing you need to know is that if you do changes, if you create new roles or new profiles, because what you should do is ideally all your hosts here should be assigned one and only one role. But we don't have any roles yet. We're going to create the first role this week. So what we do now is we assign profiles directly to the hosts. And that's okay, but normally you would only assign roles, and as long as you just make changes to adding profiles to roles, you don't have to do anything in Foreman. So as soon as you have assigned one role to one host in Foreman, you don't have to do anything more other than monitor things in Foreman. But when we're working on this, when you make changes to profiles or to classes that you want to add to the host, for Foreman to detect those changes, you have to go to Configure, Environments, Import from Manager Borg.trek. You're working. So it's working, and now it will probably just say that no changes detected. If there are changes, they will be listed here, and you just have to tick them and say submit or update. If you make changes and you go to import them and the changes aren't detected, it's most likely you have an error in your code. Because if Foreman can't validate the new code, Foreman will not import it. So if you have updated your code and it does not validate, it's not correct syntax, then you will not. Foreman will just say that there are no changes detected. Yeah. Did it say in? Yeah. They got a message that there were no changes detected. So you import your changes, and then normally all your hosts after this week's lab, you will see that, like for the monitor host, if you go to edit it, Puppet classes, you see it has been assigned one class, and that's the role monitoring server. So all your hosts ideally should be assigned just one role, and when you need to make changes, you make changes to the profiles in this role. I will show you more about that when we go through this week's lab exercise after the break.